Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review. We are live tonight on YouTube and also on RadioAlbion.com. If you like nationalist content, a great place to find more of it is over on RadioAlbion.com. It is run by my good friend Sven Longshanks. He helps with all of our conferences and events and does a great job of producing and curating the best nationalist content worldwide so that you can find it all on one site. Now, tonight's special guest, who I'll be introducing in a couple of minutes, is the one and only black-pilled Devon Stack. Tonight is going to be fantastic, and really, we couldn't have asked for a much better guest coming off the back of last week's record-breaking show with Emily Ukis, so I'm really looking forward to tonight. Now, if you would like to contribute to the show, you can contribute using Entropy. The link for Entropy is in the show description. It is on my Telegram. It is also on my Twitter, and I am just posting it in the live chat now. Entropy allows you to make donations. It also allows you to ask questions. Anyone that makes a donation will have their comment or question read out live on air. And anyone who asks a question, if their question is voted up, the best voted questions get read out or asked every week as well. So please use the Entropy link and please use that to ensure that you get your say live on the show. Now, you can also contribute to myself via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is on my BitChute. It is also in the description of every single video, and any donation is very, very humbly received. So thank you to all the people who have donated in the past. If you want to contact me, you can contact me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. That is the best way to contact me. And if you want to keep up with what Patriotic Alternative are doing, especially in these trying times, please go over to the excellent Patriotic Alternative website, which can be found at patrioticalternative.org.uk. The site is run by Laura Towler and our tech team, and there are new articles up every day. Now, before we get into the show proper, there is a very important article on the website today. In fact, the article has been written by me, and it is the first article I've ever written for the website. Now, it is not an ideological article, but it is an article that deals with this weekend's proposed protests. And I want to get this out of the way before we begin the show proper. I have issued a statement. This statement has been agreed by Laura Towler and other key people involved with Patriotic Alternative. We believe the planned protests in London at the weekend are a honey trap. We believe that those who are going to these protests will no doubt get into trouble. They will be attacked by BLM and Antifa supporters, and the police will no doubt arrest the nationalists for defending themselves. The media are already ramping this up. The police are already well aware of who is running this and who will be going. People will likely be arrested on the way down. And if they're not arrested on the way down and there is chaos, it will be us who gets the blame. We've seen these things before. We've seen them in Dover here in the UK. We have seen them in Charlottesville in the US. These kind of events do us no favors whatsoever. And although the people arranging these events will no doubt run fundraising drives for their own legal costs, they will no doubt receive plentiful donations if they are arrested, the rank and file members and supporters of these groups will not receive the same support. They will simply disappear, go to jail, lose their jobs, and get no financial compensation for their trouble. But there is a full statement now on the Patriotic Alternative website. It is also on my Telegram, and I'll be tweeting it out during the course of this show or just after this show so that everyone can see it. We are not trying to pour scorn on other groups. We understand that people are doing this because they are good-hearted, decent people who want to defend our heritage and want to defend our culture and our statues and our ancestors. But we believe that this particular event is being set up as a honey trap, which will only lead to us getting the blame for all of the trouble or any trouble that takes place. And we've already seen this in America. Different mayors, different officials in the US are already saying it's white nationalists stirring up the trouble. Do not play into their hands. If you do, you will get yourself into trouble and you will also potentially disgrace this movement and cause us to score one of the biggest own goals imaginable. And just think about this, the last thing I'm going to say on this, unless we bring it up later in the show and anyone asks questions about it. But just think about this for a moment. At this current time, Black Lives Matter and the left are tearing up cities, looting, rioting, attacking people, and ripping down our statues and vandalizing our war memorials. They are doing more recruiting for us than we could possibly do ourselves. They are now red pilling people all over the Western world on what is to come if we carry on down this multicultural, multiracial route where mass immigration is embraced by the governments of Western nations. Please keep letting them shoot themselves in the foot. Don't even things up by blowing our own toes off at the time when we are receiving so much support. And I can honestly say, over the last few days, the Patriotic Alternative website has seen record numbers of visitors, in part due to this, but also in part due to Laura Towler's excellent tweets aimed at Yorkshire Tea, which caused her to go viral and become an international news sensation, simply because Yorkshire Tea cooked. Now, we're not going to make a huge thing of that. I think it's best that if Laura should take all the credit and all the glory for that. And I hope she does a stream about this herself, because she is an absolute gem. And the work she has been doing recently is truly some of the best. And I said this earlier to other people, that what's happened here with the Yorkshire Tea incident is the best publicity nationalists have had in this country since the demise of the British National Party. And that's all down to Laura's excellent work. So my hat goes off to her. Round of applause. She is an absolute gem. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Jason for a quick introduction. What have you been up to this week, my friend? I hope you've been staying safe. And who's on tap this week? And do you have any quick thoughts on this potential protest?
Well, first thing I want to do in solidarity to my lovely sister is I want to say that just for everybody who might be new, I'm Jason, also known as No White Guilt. I care about the well-being of white people. I mean, I really care about the well-being of white people. I've been fighting for the well-being of white people for decades. And when tea time rolls around, I reach for a piping hot cup of Yorkshire Tea. Delicious. I just love the folks over at Yorkshire Tea. And you know what? They must love me too, because clearly they care about white people, just like I care about white people, where they wouldn't have all those white people working in those positions like the executives and CEO. They're doing it proper. So just a little ad there for everybody at Yorkshire Tea. But as for something more serious, when it comes to the protest at over at this statue, I guess it's the Churchill statue that they're planning, or whatever others that they're talking about, it clearly is exactly as you spelled out. It's going to be a honey trap. They're going to do just like they do every single time. Our activists, or people who care at all about the nation, who care at all about Western kind, when they defend themselves, they're going to be arrested for doing so. How dare you not let your head get caved in? So please, if you're hearing this, this has happened a great many times. This was ratcheted up by the governments. I mean, we used to be allowed, Mark, if you remember, we used to be allowed to go out and hold a protest. And yeah, the anti-whites would be allowed to throw some things at us, but everything changed at Charlottesville. The regime showed that they were willing to use the state to literally side with the malefactors in the streets and harm us. So, yeah, please, everybody who's hearing that, please stay away. Mark's absolutely right. The people who are organizing this will be able to have fundraisers to get their asses out of jail. And everyone else is just going to suffer. And we will all then, every one of us who care about white well-being in any shape or any way, shape or form, are going to be condemned. And there, trust me, there are going to be beautiful photos of some white guy who's a hero who has finally pulled, you know, three anti-whites off of him and has thrown them to the ground. And then he steps forward to grab one of them. And that will be the front page will be the poor anti-white, you know, like shrieking on the ground. That'll be on the front page. That'll be on the television. That'll be everywhere. Don't do it. On tap, we have Sarah Dye, the absolutely famous Sarah Dye here in the United States. This coming Friday, ladies and gentlemen, look for that over on the No White Guilt channel. A lovely woman, a hero, quite a hero. Talk about having intense media attention on an individual person and then her family and her children. And we're going to be having that hero on, I think it's going to be on the 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday. We look forward to seeing you all then. I pass it back to Mark. And it's fantastic to be here with Devin Stack of Black Pilled again today.
Well, thank you, Jason. And sorry to everyone who always complains every week if the intro goes over 5 minutes, but it was very important to discuss these forthcoming demonstrations. Now, without further ado, I want to introduce one of the most important voices in the dissident right, Mr. Devin Stack, Black Pilled. He's not only one of the greatest content creators on YouTube, one of the people whose videos I genuinely look forward to. I genuinely look forward to that notification that tells me when he has produced a new video. And his videos are superb. They cover a range of different topics. And some of my favorites are his videos on news commentary. He is also the author of the incredible Day of the Rope. Please pick that up. It is disappearing down the memory hole, and it deserves to be anywhere other than the memory hole. It is an excellent, excellent book. But the thing that always makes me happiest about Devin is his Instagram feed. Instagram always seems to be one of the wokest social networks, but Devin's feed on Instagram is always pure, pure red pills. Every morning when I wake up, I do look forward to opening Instagram, not to see social influencers in their underwear, but to see his amazing posts. He is funny, he is witty, he has a very, very acidic tone, and it genuinely brings a smile to my face when I see his content. We've had him on before. That was in slightly lighter circumstances, but today we have an awful lot to discuss. I welcome Devin Stack. Please introduce yourself, tell us where we can find you, and give your thoughts on the current situation. And if you like, please feel free to comment on these forthcoming demonstrations.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm Devin Stack. If you don't know about me, I have a YouTube channel, Blackpilled. Also have a website that I haven't been updating in a long time, blackpilled.com. As you mentioned, I have a Instagram page. It's black_pilled, and it's highly shadow banned. You actually have to type when you start typing in a name, it starts to auto-populate, even though I'm far and above all the other names that would appear. It doesn't, my name doesn't appear until you actually type in every single last letter. So you kind of have to be tagged in a post to find out about it or type it in directly. And then on Twitter, I am Dak Stevin at Dak Stevin. I'm on Gab, although I don't use it as much as I should perhaps. And I also on Minds and Facebook, believe it or not, but at any rate, so I usually would I do a lot of movie reviews and I do a commentary on media. I worked in media a long time. I actually worked in the propaganda, political propaganda, nonprofit industry. I don't know how else to describe it, and so I kind of see a lot of how these messages are delivered to your brain, very, you know, nuanced messages that are attached to entertainment to try to let you like entertain you while it's slowly poisoning your mind in the background. So a lot of my videos focus on that, where I talk about the hidden or sometimes not so hidden messages of movies. And but lately, I've kind of been stepping up the political stuff because it's been getting so crazy here in the United States. And so that's me.
What is your take on the situation in the United States? I mean, obviously all of this began in the US. It began in Minneapolis. I've seen everything has really snowballed very quickly. It spread like wildfire, and this hasn't been organic. I think we all know, I think everyone who watches this show knows that this is very, very much coordinated. But what's the feeling on the ground in the United States? How do people really feel about this? How do the dwindling white majority feel about what is going on? And do you think that President Trump, actually, I'll ask about President Trump in a minute. I don't want to ask you too many things at one point, but what's your feeling on all of this for a start? And then we can go into Trump. And definitely, we should also talk about Minneapolis at some point and the fact that they are now disbanding the police force in Minneapolis and saying that anyone who calls the police is doing so from a position of white privilege.
Yeah, I've actually been, you know, a lot of people think this is kind of happened overnight. I've actually been expecting something like this for a long time, for it to get really bad. So much so that I actually moved out of the city and started a homestead out in the middle of nowhere because I suspected that cities would be getting unsafe. And I did a video not that long ago. Well, actually, it's been a couple of years now, telling people, hey, you know, prepare. You need to make sure you've got, you know, food supply, water supply. There's a whole video that, you know, I go over all the basics of what you should have and, you know, which would have been also handy in terms of, you know, the COVID stuff. And so I've been out here isolated, you know, insulated from the madness because I've been following politics for a long time. And like I said, I've worked in politics for a long time. And when I wasn't working in politics, I was working in news. And so I've been, you know, watching the political process for many years. And when I saw the election of Trump and I saw the protests just at the Trump rallies in 2015, it was definitely different than any other campaign I'd ever seen before. And I remember even thinking during the Obama years, you know, like a lot of people prior to Obama, you know, they were saying, oh, this is going to be the post-racial president. After we get Obama, race relations will be healed and everything will be fine. And I remember even a lot of people right telling me this. And I was looking into Obama and saw that he was essentially a socialist and you know, really a communist. And I had no illusions that after, you know, Obama got into office, that suddenly race relations would be healed. And we saw immediately, as soon as he was elected, he used his race as a hammer. And, you know, there was the famous beer summit and, you know, just went spiraled down, you know, and just went downhill from there. And we had all these different cases. You know, we had the Trayvon Martin case. We had the hands up, don't shoot. What's his name? Whatever Brown. And when these cases would come up, you would, you know, immediately the media would jump on it. It would be like, wow, this has really bad optics. They're going to use this as a political football to try to, you know, push the anti-white agenda. And then you would look into it and it wouldn't take long before you'd realize, oh, the whole story's bullshit. You know, in the case of Trayvon Martin, obviously, you know, Zimmerman wasn't even white. He was the New York Times started calling a white Hispanic because they realized too late that even though his last name was Zimmerman, which isn't exactly a white last name anyway, but you know, he was Hispanic because he was adopted. And so they were pushing this false narrative and then he gets acquitted because it turns out that Trayvon wasn't the nice, you know, good little boy that, you know, if he would have become a surgeon or a scientist or an astronaut if it weren't for this evil racist that gunned him down for absolutely no reason. And then the same thing happened with Brown and Ferguson, where you had the video come out showing that he had just robbed a convenience store and he had just, you know, shoved the clerk out of the way. And the guy was huge. You know, he was only 18, but the guy was massive. And then you hear from the witnesses, because again, black president, black attorney general, you know, all the black people are losing their minds and burning down Ferguson. And so they send in the attorney general and they're going to crucify this white cop to show you how, you know, what happens when you're a racist cop. But then it turns out that all the witnesses that saw what happened, who happened to be black, said no. Actually, he didn't put his hands up. He didn't say don't shoot. He charged the cop. He was trying to take the gun from the cop, and the cop, you know, did what he had to do. And so, again, that kind of just went away. But the funny thing is, if you talk to a lot of black people today, they will all tell you that, I mean, none of them know that it's false. Like none of them, everyone, they still wear t-shirts that say hands up, don't shoot. In these protests that we're having right now, they're still walking around with their hands up saying, you know, I can't breathe, don't shoot. You know, that, you know, they're still chanting the same mantras of Ferguson and channeling that energy when it was all based on a lie. So when this case came out with George Floyd, I immediately knew that there was going to be more to the story. There always is. And look, I know it's really cool to hate cops, and a lot of people, you know, like, oh, what are you, some kind of bootlicker? You bootlicker? And it's like, no, it's just that I've worked in security before too. You know, I've worked as a bouncer, and I've had to throw people out. I've had to restrain people. I know, and when you're in that kind of a job, and a bouncer at a CD bar, which is what I was, isn't even as bad as like what these guys had. Well, look at, just to give you an example, the police that had to restrain this guy were doing it in the same neighborhood we were watching videos of people running around smashing windows and burning the whole neighborhood down. That's the group of people they're policing every day. So you can imagine the kind of encounters they have on a regular basis. So when you see this video, it's really easy to jump to conclusions and think emotionally and be like, you know, honestly think in a feminine way about it and say that, oh, it was just too rough. Like, I can't believe that, you know, this is what the black people are having to deal with, as if he had just, you know, got pulled over for speeding and they yanked him out of the car and put their knee on his neck and choked him to death or something like that. And which is, by the way, a lot of how this is being framed. But, you know, sure enough, a little by little, some of this stuff starts to trickle out. After the fires have already started and after the riots have already started, and not that it will matter, but you start to find out that this guy was no angel. This guy had already done 5 years in prison for not that long ago for robbing a woman who was pregnant, and he held a gun against her belly as he robbed her. And so right away, you just got to think to yourself, if this guy, even if, let's say he's reformed, he went through the prison process and, you know, whatever, if I had a friend, a good friend that I'd known for years, and someone walked up to me and was like, hey, Devin, you know about George? I'm like, well, no, what did he do? Well, you know, he robbed some lady and like held a gun to her pregnant belly. I'd be like, oh, I'm never talking to George again. Like, I'm sorry. Like, he's obviously not a good person at that point. He's got a rap sheet, and it's not just that. He's got a rap sheet a couple pages long. He's been arrested, I think, something like 11 different times. And at this particular moment that he was arrested, he was high on fentanyl, high on meth. He was trying to buy cigarettes with a counterfeit $20 bill. And then the clerk was like, look, this is fake. Just give me the cigarettes back and I won't call the cops. And he wouldn't, and he left. And so, like, it's just like this comedy of errors that everyone wants to blame the cop, and no one wants to look at George and say, look, dude, if you had just acted like a normal human at any point along this chain of events, then you would not, you'd still be alive. You know, like if you had just not been an absolute shitbag at any one of these junctures, you'd still be alive. But again, this is the martyr that they always have to pick, which, by the way, kind of tells you exactly how realistic their narrative is. If every time they pull out one of these examples to publicize, like this is supposed to be the silver bullet. When you have an example like this that you're going to publicize and use as your martyr, this should be like your best example possible. And every time, I mean, with maybe a couple exceptions, but like most of the time they pull these guys out, it's it's deserved. And obviously no one deserves, like, I'm not saying he deserved to die for trying to buy a pack of cigarettes with a counterfeit 20 while driving around high on meth and fentanyl. But I'll tell you what, if he hadn't died and he had ran over a kid with his car because he was high on drugs, which very easily could have happened, we'd never even hear about this guy. We'd never even hear about that kid. Black Lives Matter would not be out protesting the death of that child, and it would just become a statistic. And the only reason why we heard about it is because that video and because that cop was white. If the cop had been black, no one would ever have heard of any of this. And so all these people who are like, especially a lot of these white allies, these defectors that want to say that, oh no, it's about police brutality. It's about police brutality. You know, we can get behind this. A lot of little libertarians, same story. They're lying. They're not wrong. They're lying to you because they know as well as everyone listening right now knows that if the cop had been black, then none of this would happen. Or, you know, let's take it a step further. If the cop had been black and George Floyd had been white, none of this, it would still be police brutality, right? No, it wouldn't. No one would care. And so it's clearly a racial issue. As we have seen since the riots, you had that guy doing the social experiment where he was walking up to white women, walking around and saying like, hey, I'm from Black Lives Matter. Will you kneel and apologize for your white privilege? And without hesitation, they got on their knees. And it's all about intimidation. It's about racial intimidation. And that's what we're seeing right now. And this is the kind of thing I've seen growing for decades. Now, I'll admit, I did not expect it to flare up to the level that it did. And part of that, though, is because I didn't expect the cops being told to stand down at the level that they were. And I understand not every municipality was like that, but I mean, certainly Minneapolis was just like a war zone. I was watching live streams the first few nights of that, and it was just, you could have done anything you want, and people did. There's that story of there was a white woman that was kidnapped and raped and killed, like I think the first or second night, and no one's going to hear about her. No one knows about that woman. I mean, how many people died as a result of these riots because of this criminal, this scumbag did he deserve death? Probably not. But did his death possibly save lives? And I know that's a controversial thing to say. Hey, possibly. Driving around high on meth and fentanyl in a giant SUV. You know, that's a giant death machine. It's like a 4,000 pound piece of metal that you're driving around when you're high on multiple drugs. And not only that, he resisted arrest. Like every one of these cases, it's because they're resisting arrest. And I'm not baffled that the Black Lives Matter people are behaving in this way, because they really don't care. It's just they have political goals and I believe racial dominance goals that they're trying to accomplish. So they don't, I mean, they you could tell them all these details, and it's not that they wouldn't understand the justice of what we're talking about or even the rationality of it. They just don't care, because it doesn't, that's not what they're there for. They're there to get an agenda done. But what I am a little bit surprised by is the cowardice of a lot of, you know, including Trump. And like you said, we can get in a little bit, but like a lot of these people, these conservatives on the right, including Trump, that said, I'm sure that George is looking down on us, looking down on these black unemployment numbers and smiling that life is getting better for black people in America. And, you know, obviously first, I don't think he's looking down from anywhere. You know, if anything, he's looking up. But it's really embarrassing, but it also really illustrates a point that I'm making, I made in my last video, and that is something that I'm really want people to start wrapping their heads around. And, you know, something that I think we all kind of sort of knew already, but this has really made it clear. We are not the, I mean, we're not the obviously there's no such thing as white privilege, but that there's so much not white privilege that we are the outsider. We are the underdog. We are the subverters. We are the we are going against the mainstream, and we are a tiny minority trying to not roll back society to what it was, because that's impossible. We are now strangers in our own lands trying to make it into something that we like, because right now if we continue down this current course, it's going to become even more dangerous than it already is for our people.
I will jump in for just a brief moment. Is my mic working? Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, because the program just said that my mic was unplugged. I don't know why. The dashboard did. I just want to make a really quick point and a very astute assessment there, Devin. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. The one thing I would say, though, is that the anti-whites would very much like a much better individual to beatify. They would much rather have like some little non-white girl who had never done anything wrong in her life, and then for whatever reason, a bunch of white guys in a pickup truck did something horrible, you know, ran her over or something like this, and then beat her more. That would be better for the anti-white narrative. The issue is that they can't find that because it doesn't exist. That is just all fiction from the anti-white narrative. So when you have a country of 350 million people, you're going to have it every single second of every single day, a person who has authority harming someone in some way who does not have authority. And in some of those cases, the person in authority in the country of 350 million is going to be white. And in some of those cases, the person who's being harmed is going to be non-white. So if we stay inside of the anti-white narrative, at any moment, the anti-whites can say, here's another example. And here's another example. They're endless, that will demonstrate the proof of the anti-white narrative. And thus we never escape from it. But yeah, they would absolutely love to have somebody who wasn't on drugs, who wasn't a monster, who hadn't abused a pregnant woman with a pistol, who hadn't robbed homes, who hadn't participated in pornographic movies, who hadn't resisted arrest, who wasn't large and their body a weapon. With some of these other guys that you named, their body alone is a weapon. When you have the strength to punch somebody in the face and kill them from the punch, that is a weapon. And of course, we see, I don't know if you saw, Devin, but in the Washington Post, they decided to fake some stats. They took the actual data. And this is why another reason why we don't stay in the anti-white narrative is they took the data of unarmed non-white individuals, specifically black in this case. And then what they wanted to do is say, well, look how many white police officers are harming them. Well, then since there were just too few, almost none, and in a country of 350 million, talk about a victory over the moon of what they were, of how they have just so terrorized white people that they won't police, they won't even harm as often as possible, as often as they can prevent from having it happen, a non-white person when they're arresting them. But you would imagine if you hadn't terrorized the entire white population, you would have some more realistic numbers. But in order to get data that would prove their anti-white narrative, they said, okay, well, black males killed by police officers. And they just hoped nobody would notice that they had switched that little bit of it so that it could be any police officer of any race. And then they had to switch the definition of what it meant to be unarmed. So they changed it so that if a black guy had taken the gun off of the police officer or someone else, he's unarmed. So that's getting killed unarmed. If you had taken a firearm off of a police officer or someone else, if the black guy was driving a one ton, two tons, whatever it might be, and we just saw in all of these cases of these destroyers out in the streets killing police officers by running over them, that a car is can be a weapon of mass destruction. You can plow through a crowd of people and guarantee that if it were a white person doing it, it was actually. They did have a white guy, some idiot psychopath who claims to be the one of the leaders of the Klan, and he bumped somebody with his truck. He bumped somebody that refused to go with the ambulance to the hospital, and he's all over the news as trying to murder people with his car. Well, in the Washington Post, they say, well, if the black guy has a car and he's running people over and he's fleeing from police, then he's all and he dies and the police kill him in the process. Well, he's also unarmed. So this is what the anti-whites do with data. This is why you have to get out of the anti-white narrative. And I pass it to Mark.
Well, thank you for that. The next thing I want to talk about before we talk about Trump and before we talk about anything, we've just broken our viewing record. Last week, we had an all-time high with Emily Ukis of 2,329 concurrent viewers. And we've just got up to 2,379 just now. Can we break 2,400? It would be nice. We are at a new high. Thank you, Devin. You are now the new record holder. But we need to move on to the issue of police in Minneapolis, because I watched an incredible video the other day, which was one of the council members for Minneapolis on CNN. And she was saying that they were going to disband the police, essentially get rid of the police force. And the woman on CNN, the host of the show, asked her a question, said, well, if we disband the police force, what happens when people call the police? And this council member, she said, well, people have asked me that. My friends and neighbors have said, what happens if I want to call the police? And her answer to her friends and neighbors, and this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, is that white people who wish to call the police are doing so from a point of white privilege. That white privilege is what allows you to call the police, because apparently no one from any other ethnic group has ever called the police or ever received any assistance whatsoever from police officers. But this is a very interesting situation, because I was talking to Devin before the show and I said, it's very clear for everyone to see now that these riots that have swept across the Western world have been absolutely coordinated. This isn't something that's actually organic. This is something that's very much a coordinated attack on the West. And although I'm no fan of the police, and everyone knows that I particularly despise the police in Britain for what they've done to white British girls, but isn't it interesting that the police will be, in many places, a last line of defence if these rioters break out of city centres, start attacking people, go after homes, go after people in the street? And we're seeming to see two things here. On one hand, we're seeing the establishment, the media, the people behind Black Lives Matter, the people behind Antifa, organizing and justifying these riots. And at the same time, those in positions of authority are either calling for the police to stand down, or they're actively trying to disband the police, essentially placing the general public at the mercy of a revolutionary mob. These are insane times. And the people in Minneapolis on the council are clearly insane people. It's incredible what they're doing. But what's your take on this, Devin? And do you see eventually, with the police force potentially being disbanded, do you see these riots breaking out of city centres, going into residential areas? And do you see white people being attacked indiscriminately by these mobs with no protection whatsoever from the police? Because there won't be any police. It's amazing. It reminds me of something that you might see in a dystopian movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe I should do a review of Escape from L.A. or Escape from New York, one of those 80s movies where, they had to wall off an entire city because it has just become just lawless mobs going around and burning the place down. It is a little puzzling unless you understand that they have decided that if they want political power, one of the ways they can achieve that, especially now they know this for sure, is through violence and physical intimidation. And so if the only thing standing between you and your political and racial opponents are a police force provided, by tax dollars, then you get rid of the police force. I think a lot of people are focusing too much on they don't want cops because they want to do illegal stuff, like they want to sell crack or whatever it is they want to do without getting arrested. It's more complicated than that. It's not just that they want to not be arrested for petty crimes. They want to have that mob political force using physical intimidation. Like if you live in the suburbs and you realize that if some referendum doesn't get passed that they want to get passed, that they're going to come to your neighborhood and burn it down. You're either not going to show up to vote against it or you might even vote for it. So just to try in self-preservation. So I think that's what it is. You know, we've seen the communists that have been subverting the country for a long time use the black community as kind of a weapon really for decades now already. And I think just now they're ready to use live fire in their weapon. And so that's what I think is going on with that. I think that it's they want this whole like white privilege nonsense this woman's talking about. I don't even know that she believes that. I think that she's probably also a revolutionary of some kind and knows that this is a way that they can accomplish what they want to get done. And it could also be I don't know. I don't know how much I know there's a lot of people on the right that predict and think about and prepare for what many of us think is probably an inevitable conflict of some kind that could lead to a balkanization or something like that. I don't know if that's something the left has in the forefront of their mind, but I will say that they do seem to play the long game a lot better than the people on the right. So perhaps this is part of that too.
Yes. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jason? Do you have any thoughts on anything Devin said or on the fact that Minneapolis are disbanding the police? Are the powers that be actively trying to place us at the mercy of these mobs?
Well, I think this is an interesting case. I'd like to see exactly how what is planned in Minneapolis is rolled out, because there'll be no actual disbanding of law enforcement. The anti-whites need law enforcement as much as anyone else does to protect them from the criminals. Of course, most of those are anti-whites. What I predict is that they will create a parallel group of observers that will have badges or something of this nature. And this is what will end up being the sort of compromise. And then slowly these groups will be given the power to arrest or intervene in arrests and this sort of thing. And they will be this parallel dark police force, essentially, that will function for the purpose of serving anti-whites and anti-whiteism. Ultimately, then that would be what will usurp or replace, supplant the actual police forces. So it's not going to be, they even had these people on some kind of some show, and they asked, well, okay, if the police force is disbanded and there is a live shooter, then who's going to take care of the live shooter incident? And they woman responded by saying, well, since we still have the police, it will be the police for now. So you have people with the intelligence level and maturity of four-year-olds, except they have the physicality to be able to kill you with one punch and to burn your business down, destroy civilization. And so this is like a lollipop. They're just sort of holding out there for them. They don't control the police in the same way, and everywhere in the same way that they control the military. The military has much more of a centralized system, so like a nerve system. So they control the military now. They used to, if you remember, it used to be nothing but bashing of the military by the anti-whites. Well, now they dominate the Pentagon, and therefore they dominate the entire chain of command. So they don't bash the military like they used to. Police departments are broken up. You can't control one police department and control them all. There's no one ring for them all. So they need to attack these institutions like this so that there isn't any more opposition to whatever they would like to do to us. And so, yeah, I predict that it'll be they'll come up with this parallel shadow group that will be able to observe, carry a badge, eventually get more power, and then they will supplant the actual law enforcement and be able to carry out. And so therefore, and by the way, just let me say this and then I'll pass it right back. They actually said, they were asked, well, what will happen when a thief robs someone's house? Who will come? What will they do? And the suggestion was that there will be psychiatrists who will they didn't say how the psychiatrist will track down the thief who robbed your house, but somehow the psychiatrist will find the thief who robbed your house, and then he or she will sit down with the homeowner and the thief and try to work out exactly the problem. What's really the problem? Why is the thief, and what are you willing to give up to the thief? And that's the kind of dystopia that they are. And it's all built on just this, how do we harm white people? It's just about, that's why folks, you say, well, what's their plan? They have no plan. They don't, because it's all about, the objective is just harm Western kind, Western civilization. Police are a part of Western civilization. Policing is a part of Western civilization. Police protect white people, white businesses, as well as everyone else. So it's just like I say, if you're black or you're Asian or whatever it is, and you stand up for the First Amendment, you might be called a Nazi, because at some point that is going to interfere with anti-white ability to inflict harm on Western kind and Western civilization. Your support of the First Amendment, your support of the police department does the same thing. So that's how we end up at, okay, well, we destroy the police department, then what? Well, we just grab some psychiatrists and we try to bring the criminals and the rapists and the victims together for a conversation. They just have no clue. I pass it back, brother.
Now, this is obviously the important question. And well, before we get to the important question, we're now over 2,500 people watching. We've had a high of 2,559. This is phenomenal. And this is with YouTube throttling the stream and hiding it from my subscribers as well. You can tell if this was a level playing field, we'd have 5,000 or more watching live now. This is incredible. We have a far greater reach than the Guardian's Navarra media streams, the left-wing streams. We're pulling in huge numbers, and we're doing this because we're telling the truth, and we've been telling the truth for decades now, and it's finally paying dividends. People want to hear the real unedited truth. And we need to be truthful about this man, Donald Trump. Now, I think Donald Trump was a great campaigner. He was a great candidate. He was a man who said all the right things and did all the right things as a candidate. But I've said repeatedly, he's been a massive disappointment in office. And I think right now he's being a massive disappointment. He isn't really getting a grip of this situation. Now, I think the Democrats could end up handing Trump a victory. And if they hand him a victory, it will be over issues such as the police force. If the Democrats make disbanding police forces a major issue at the next election, I think that could hand the victory to Donald Trump, because many moderate people, many people sit on the fence. They will not like that one bit. But so far, Trump has done nothing. He has been very, very ineffective. And at the moment, or just the other day, I saw that Trump's approval ratings are at lows that rivaled those of Jimmy Carter's. And now I think Trump's approval ratings are at a low, not because Trump has acted in a racist manner, not because Trump has let down the black community, not because Trump hasn't cucked hard enough. I think Trump's approval ratings are at a low because the people who voted for him, the people who supported him, the people who donated to his campaign, I think those people were overwhelmingly, or would overwhelmingly, support him taking harsher measures against these rioters. The people who voted for Trump want him to act now. They want him to restore order. They want a president who is going to be strong in the face of these criminal gangs. And I think if he fails to act, it won't endear Black Lives Matter rioters and Antifa members to him. It won't endear Democrats to him. If he fails to act, it will only serve to annoy his own base and the people who voted for him back in 2016. What's your take on this, Devin? I don't think you're the biggest Trump fan, but how do you think he's handled this? And do you think his own support base will feel very, very disappointed at this time?
No, he's been a terrible president. He's been a terrible president. And in fact, what's really embarrassing is that it's one thing to not follow through on literally anything, quite frankly. And it's quite another to, you know, when your other selling point is, well, you know, at least he's like this, you know, no nonsense strong man. You know, he's like the tough patriarch. You know, maybe he's not building the wall and maybe he's not doing anything about internet censorship and maybe he's not, prosecuting the people that beat up his supporters but sitting idly by as his supporters get prosecuted. You know, like maybe there's something going on with this Epstein and why he was allowed to die in prison or be whisked away or whatever happened to that. You know, maybe, you know, there's all these things, but at least he's this strong guy, this tough, strong guy who turns the lights off at the White House when it's surrounded by insurrection and goes to the bunker and doesn't so much as even tweet. And the display of weakness in the face of this insurrection that days long, countrywide insurrection, this impotence that was plain for everyone to see. And I mean, even the QAnon boomer types that were scratching their head, like, come on, man, do something. It was really, really depressing. And even now, as I said before, like his only response to this has been to talk about black unemployment numbers and talk about what he's done for the black community. And it's like, look, you're still pandering. You're still pandering. And you have yet to even mention the group that got you elected. Trump has never once talked about white Americans. In fact, I was curious because I started to think about it and I was like, you know, I don't think any president has addressed white Americans specifically in a really long time, none in my memory. So I found this database. I think it's from the University of West Virginia, and it lets you search the addresses from presidents going all the way back. And so I just searched for the term white Americans. And the last time a president uttered, at least in an official address, and that includes, it's not just like State of the Unions, it's like all, you know, every address and interviews even, was Bill Clinton in 1995 after the Rodney King verdict, and there was riots yet again. Another example of pretty much, you know, this, like I said, this has been going on. It flares up every so often. You know, go back to 1968, same thing. But in 1995, it was his address telling white Americans that they need to understand the source and the absolute intensity of black pain in America. And I read the whole speech, and it was the same kind of garbage. It was the same kind of garbage that Trump has been talking about, obviously with Clinton's style, but it was the same garbage. And I was like, man, it's like nothing changed in all of these years. It's like nothing changed. And so I kept going back. I was like, okay, well, what about, you know, before that? And I found there was a search result from 1906, and I'm sorry, I'm going to show my ignorance here. I don't remember what president it was in 1906, and I was like, well, surely, you know, in 1906, it whatever he's going to be saying is actually going to probably sound racist, right? Like he's going to be saying, you know, something very, you know, what would be considered now what a white supremacist would be saying. And so I start reading through it, and it's literally this. It's the same thing. It's the same in 1906. It's the same thing. He's talking about how whites in the South need to learn to live with blacks and how they need to educate blacks and how they're an important part of our society. And it's just like, it's for over 100 years, we've been doing the same thing and expecting different results. You know, how far does this go? And I didn't have time to keep going beyond that, but it was just amazing to me that for an entire century, presidents have been addressing white Americans and telling them that they need to be more sympathetic to black Americans, and that all this violence and this conflict is 100% the fault of white people, and that we need to just be more understanding. And it's just, it's really... I guess that's why I'm not that I mean, we shouldn't expect anything else from Trump. It's he's literally just saying what every president has been saying for 100 years. And he's not this transformative president that everyone thought that he was going to be. He's just Jeb Bush, if Jeb Bush was funnier on Twitter. And that's essentially the only difference that I can tell. I don't know, maybe Jeb would do all the same things for Israel that Trump has been doing as well, but maybe not. So maybe it would be Jeb Bush if he was funnier on Twitter and gave less free stuff to Israel. I don't know. But it's really frustrating because you have a lot of people. I almost, I vacillate back and forth between wondering, well, is it better if Trump loses? Because you have all these people that are disconnected from the problems. You know, like I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'm out in the desert and I'm kind of insulated from the problems of the city, but I still pay attention. Like it's not happening in my backyard at least, but I'm watching, you know, it go down in different cities around the country through an unfiltered lens. I'm not watching it on CNN or Fox News or something like that. And you have a good portion of the people who support Trump who are watching it through this lens. Thankfully, I guess Tucker Carlson adds a little slightly more reality to the situation. But by and large, you have a lot of people who don't realize how bad it is because where are they going to see the videos? You know, where are they going to hear the stories? You know, like even Trump is telling them that, you know, like this should never have happened. And George Floyd is this great guy looking down on us from heaven, you know? And so you have this group of people who think that because Trump is in office that we're winning, that, you know, they think that it's all real in their mind. The wall might not be real on the border, but it's real in their mind. Like I get in these arguments all the time with these people that, oh, he's built like, you know, 200 miles of the wall. And it's like, no, he just replaced broken fences with not broken fences. You know, there's no big, beautiful wall, that's on the border like we were promised. There's no, there's no lock her up. There's no, any of this stuff that he was promising. And, but they think that as long as Trump is in the White House, everything's fine. And they think that if we get someone like Joe Biden, then we're all going to be marched into camps and that'll be it. And I don't know. Like, I think I think that's hyperbole. I don't think we're going to be marched into camps if Biden wins. But yeah, like I could see how, for example, tech censorship might get ratcheted up, all, you know, beyond what it already is. There could be things that hurt us in ways that make it even more difficult for our survival if we get someone like Biden into office. But at the same time, it's kind of like a flip a coin situation where, well, you know, if Trump loses, which is, I think, entirely possible, more possible than a lot of these people think that keep saying, oh, it's going to be a Trump slide. And, I don't think they're paying attention. I think it's really iffy. The other scenario I see is if there's any question whatsoever, and I tweeted something about this today because I think it was, I don't remember anymore. Some news agency was saying that it could be days before we get the election results because there's going to be all these mail-in ballots because of the lockdowns and, you know, the COVID-19 stuff and whatever. And so that it could be, election night happens and the next morning or maybe for a week, no one knows who won the election. That's going to be a really tense week and it's going to give both sides enough time to really, you know, wind up their constituents so that when the results finally come in, they'll be contested. I think if there's any doubt whatsoever, that either candidate won or lost, which I think is highly likely, there's going to be bloodshed. There's going to be riots. There's going to be even if it's a decisive victory for Trump, you're going to have, I think, violence and that you wouldn't have if it was a decisive victory for Biden. I mean, you'll have some angry people tweeting about the boogaloo, which of course the media has now latched onto and thinks is some kind of like a secret club or something like that. But I mean, you're going to have, you know, people that are angry and upset, but they're not going to go out and riot. Whereas I think that if Trump wins decisively, which I don't think will happen, there will be riots. And if there's any question whatsoever, there could be a problem. And there's even the outside possibility. I don't know that this would actually happen, but if Trump loses and it's razor thin, he might even say that, hey, you know what? I think there is voter fraud. I'm not going to leave office. I mean, he would certainly have the backing of a lot of people. I don't know that he would have the backing of his own military, as we've seen recently. We had, one of the reasons I think Trump didn't do anything when we had this insurrection going on was the his own Secretary of Defense. I mean, openly, publicly, in a news conference, said that he didn't want to do that. That he didn't think that was a good idea. Contradicting his boss, who had just moments ago said that he would want to do that if governors and mayors weren't able to take care of it themselves. So this idea that Trump has the military on his side, that I keep hearing from a lot of people that the military is right wing, it's just false. I worked in DC for a long time directly with people at DOD, and I don't think I met a single one of them that wasn't basically a communist. And even the rank and file, I mean, they've changed the, we've all seen the videos of these, they're guardsmen. I guess it's not the same, but we've all seen the videos of the twerking guardsmen. It was basically it was like the nurses all over again. You had these people like dancing around in the streets with the protesters, with unloaded guns because they weren't allowed to have ammunition in their guns. It's going to be interesting. I'll tell you what, whatever happens with Trump in this election, for all his faults, he's made it at least entertaining. That's about the only compliment I can give him.
Well, thank you. Well, we've got to the halfway point of the show, and I'd like to thank the massive audience. We've got nearly 2,700 people watching now. And if this is their first time watching the show, please make sure you drop a like on the show. It's great to see people liking. It's also great to see people sharing the stream. Now, the first half of the show is always chat, and the second half of the show is always answering questions and commenting on questions sent in by the public. If you want to make a donation, if you want to ask a question, you can still do so. The link is in the chat. It's in the show description. It's on my Telegram and on my Twitter. We use Entropy. That's the way to contribute. And we will be answering these questions now. And we'll start with a $4 donation from Slorts. Thank you very much. And there was no question, just a donation. So thank you. HM gave $3. Thank you very much. And says, does anyone know what Laura Towler is drinking now? Well, Laura is the lady of the moment, and she is super famous the world over after going viral for having a little bit of a spat with Yorkshire Tea, who asked her not to drink her tea. I know she's in the chat now. Laura, if you'd like to explain, what are you drinking now? Are you still on Yorkshire Tea, or have you gone elsewhere? And I'll answer that as and when the answer comes in. Thank you, HM, for the donation. Jason Latte, he who has an excellent YouTube channel, please subscribe to him. He gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, Devin is right. We are all brothers. We are. Sensum Kamenum gave £10. Thank you very much. And said, just a show of support and to say that Devin's work is excellent. I'm sure he won't mind me plugging his book, Day of the Rope. The audio version is read by Devin himself and is excellent. Thank you very much. And at the end of the show, I'm sure Devin can tell us where his book is available. Laura Towler has said, I need some time to mourn my breakup with Yorkshire Tea. She isn't saying that she's moved on yet. She hasn't got a new brew just yet. Zuma Imperata gave $5. Thank you very much. And said, looking forward to the show. Devin's most recent video was fantastic. It really puts things into perspective for me and reminded me of the necessary ideological diversity, not only of our movement, but also of nationalist movements throughout history. Thank you very much. Junta Mominari gave $3. Black Lives Matter rallies are a Zionist soft power exercised across the West. Elites, lumpen proles, Silicon Valley, and corporate snitch culture all teaming up to suppress whites during this market Stalinist revolt. Thank you. Junta Mominari gave another $3 and said, a big white pill. Hong Kong incomes are 50% higher and crime is much lower than the UK. Many Cantonese will not want to immigrate to the UK. Thank you very much. Sam Sheridan gave $5. Thank you very much. And said, Devin's last video about unity being a strength makes sense. but there are actors amongst us trying to split us even more. I believe this counter demonstration on the weekend is being organized by the you know who's. Stay safe and take care, everyone. Well, thank you for the donation, Sam. And we said earlier, we've released a full statement about the demonstration at the weekend in London. I believe the counter demonstrations in London are a honeypot. I think they are a trap. They look like they're going to be like Charlottesville or the Dover protests. And we've warned people. Protecting your local war memorial and turning up unannounced is one thing. Telling the enemy that you're going to turn up fully announced at Parliament Square at a given time on Saturday is an absolute recipe for disaster, especially considering the media and the celebrity power backing this movement. And in London, you have to also remember that white people are already a minority. There is a Muslim mayor and there is an anti-white metropolitan police force who will be itching to arrest anyone who is of nationalist persuasion. Pro Cyan Lotor gave £10. Thank you very much. Any tips for staying positive? The endless stream of anti-white attacks has left me feeling incredibly low and it's crushing my spirit. I tried to take a break from social media, but then feel like I'm purposely being ignorant. I'd take even the smallest white pill at the moment. Well, Devon and Jason, although you're called black-pilled, do you have any white pills for this gentleman? Devon and Jason, any white pills at the moment?
Well, I would say, in terms of keeping your spirits up, start a garden, you know, and start looking at ways you can get out of the city. And you know, I know that there's kind of like a homestead movement, and I don't think it's right for everybody. I think it's important that we have people in the cities too, because the cities are where the power is wielded. And, so if that's the right place for you, then that, you know, that's the right place. But, you know, me personally, I spend at least an hour a day at a necessity, but it's still a break from the constant stream of bad news and going directly into my cranium, you know, digging holes and planting plants and, you know, trees and cactuses or cacti or however you want to call it. And you know, fixing this place as it falls apart and you know, working with your hands. I think that's really important. But yeah, preparing also, like, that's another thing you can, it doesn't have to preparing, you know, prepping, even though you're kind of prepping for like a cataclysmic event, it in and of itself is like a fun thing to do, you know, like learning how to preserve food and learning how to store water you know, or even just putting a few rounds through, a rifle to, you know, familiarize yourself with your weapon and stuff like that. I mean, that stuff can be fun. It can be relaxing. And it is important to take a break from the nonsense. I'm probably going to be taking not a break so much as I need to get book two out the door. And it's been like impossible because it seems like every time I step away to polish it off and finish it, you know, like the world starts burning again. But I'm going to probably in the next week or so take it, you know, a whole week or something and just focus on that. But, you have to stay informed. But I feel like if you do things with the intention of preparing for the future, you know, and building, you know, something for your family, that really, I think the only time you really get blackpilled is when you feel like that it's hopeless and there's no future. But there's always going to be a future. People were having kids during the Civil War. You know, people were having kids during worse times than the time that we're in now. And so you know, and having families. I mean, some of you might not be at that phase in your life yet or beyond that phase. But there's always a future to be had. We're gonna make it through this. It's just that we happen to be you know, whether we were selected for this time or we were just unlucky, you know, this is just this is the hand that we're dealt, and it doesn't mean we can't enjoy playing the game.
I would say that we need you all. The reason why anybody would feel disconsolate about what's going on now is because they feel like they can't make a difference, and you can make a difference, and we are making a difference. You need to get out there right now, and you need to help yourself first and foremost to go free, and you need to help your friends and family next to go free. You can go free with them simultaneously. You can go further than that. We have people dropping no white guilt leaflets with this information right now in the midst of the destruction of our cities, right near the cities that are being actually destroyed by the anti-whites. If you feel that you are making a difference in the world, you will feel that you are accomplishing something, and you will be, and we need you, and you need us. If you decide to isolate or sequester yourself somewhere, and you're just going to wait until we save you and come and tell you that everything is okay, there's not going to be a day that that happens. The mobs are going to roll up over your hills and consume you alive, just like they're consuming our brothers and sisters in South Africa and Rhodesia. So if you decide to wait, if you decide that you're just going to hang out and pass the time and hope that things get better, then you will be devoured just like our brothers and sisters are being devoured there. You need to get out, and you need to ensure the well-being of our community, which will ensure the well-being. And by our community, I mean our people, our race. You need to ensure the well-being of our community, because only by ensuring that will you ensure your well-being. And you can do this in a very significant way by distributing this information, by getting to people with this curative contagion, which they will be able to share with others. And the more people we help to go free of this anti-white nonsense, the stronger we will become. Water molecules, H2O molecules, when united together, is a tsunami, and we will take back our lands. Come with us, go free, and you'll see that all of this disconsolate thoughts evaporate as soon as you get constructive. Pass it back.
Well, the biggest white pill for me, and it's quite simple actually, is over the past few weeks, everything that we've been predicting for decades has come true. And we've seen the public changing their opinion. We've seen a polarization of society. We've seen record numbers of people going to the Patriotic Alternative website. And we've seen Laura Taylor go viral over her choice of tea. What we're seeing here is a massive sea change in politics. And that's what we need if we're going to be set free. You see, when the system introduces huge numbers of people from overseas into our nation and changes our culture, if they do that slowly, people don't really notice. A slow, gradual slide to the abyss is something that people can deal with. It doesn't jolt them. It doesn't shock them. They just go along for the ride, and eventually they end up in the abyss, and they don't really know how they got there. But this isn't a slow, gradual slide. This is a huge jolt. This is a massive bump. And those massive jolts and bumps wake people up. They alert people to what's really happening. And this, for me, is a huge white pill in itself, because it is going to tell lots of normal people exactly what the future holds. And that will drive more people towards us, which is what we need, because we're building a real community. And the fact is, when I see the number of emails I get per day, when I see the number of people who want to come to our events, when I see the number of people desperate for this lockdown to end so they can set up branches and groups and get active locally, who want leaflets, who want resources, the buzz around Patriotic Alternative now is the same or even greater than the buzz around the BNP at its height. What we are facing here is a chance to build a genuinely exciting movement, and a movement that, for once, is absolutely racially conscious and completely unashamed of that fact. That, for me, is the biggest white pill imaginable. When I used to be in the BNP, it always felt like I was tied up. Like, I couldn't really say what I thought, that we always had to cook on the issue of optics, that we always had to just say the right thing and toe a line so that the media didn't get too nasty with us. And we've got where we are now without cooking at all. And it feels so fantastic to get this far and to have done so on our own terms and in a completely free and open manner. These are worrying times, but they're also times that present a huge opportunity, and we are going to make sure we grasp that with both hands. So don't despair. The future is something that presents so many opportunities. Leachim Olrat gave $10. Thank you very much. And said, hello, and thank you from New York City. I think your advice to disengage from events now is wise. My question is, do you foresee a time frame when it will be possible for us to safely hold real life gatherings or conferences? Yes, we can hold loads of gatherings. Just don't tell your enemy where you're meeting. You have to operate as if you're fighting a guerrilla conflict. This means that if you're doing something, if you want to go and print a White Lives Matter banner, do it. Print it, have it delivered to your house, tell 5 or 6 activists, go and hang it off a bridge somewhere. But don't tell the media, the press, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the time, the date, and the place that you're going to do this. Because if you do, you'll bring trouble upon yourself. We're not at the point yet where we have hundreds of thousands of people willing to take to the streets. And we're not at the point yet where we have enough people in the establishment or within public bodies to support us if we did. So we have to we have to box clever, and that's just what we need to keep doing. Unknown California gave $3. This is a question for Devon, and I saw this. He says, Devon, what do you think about Ice Cube naming a certain international clique on Twitter?
I'll tell you what, I mean, he doesn't like us either. I think in some ways, probably lumps us together with this international clique, but I still think it's funny as hell that he's tweeting this stuff out. That's making a lot of people uncomfortable because he does have the armor of his skin color. And I don't think Twitter is going to ban Ice Cube, especially not right now. Like, out of all the times for him to be able to do this and get away with it, this is the time. So it's and it's not, I mean, a lot of his red pills are they're not really that clever, and they're kind of, you know, it almost seems to me that he was on black YouTube watching like a lot of these conspiracy theorist guys that, like, you know, that think that they used to, you know, have flying pyramids and all that kind of a stuff. And I think that he's just been going down some rabbit hole, because a lot of what he's saying, while he is drawing attention to this group, it's not really, there's not any depth to it or anything like that, but it is still funny. Like, it's funny watching people like Ben Shapiro squirm and complain and shriek. So yeah, it's entertaining.
I'm obviously a huge Ice Cube fan now. I'll be rushing out buying, does he have t-shirts, CDs, playing his most notable tracks. And I'm here, Ice Cube. My phone is in my hand. Getting my number is very easy to do. When you want to do a mixtape or some form of rap collaboration, I am the white guy. I am the white guy to do this collaboration with. You know, you want to drop the J-Woke mixtape with Marky C. That is going to be, and that can be my rapper name. You know, we can have Ice Cube and Marky C drop the J-Woke mixtape live on Twitter, and none of the white moderators will know what to do with it. Quebec gave $50 and said, big fan of Black Pill. Thank you very much for the very generous donation. Kevin Day gave £3 and said, what do you think of Chris at Patriotic Talk Groip call yesterday and the Groipers work in general? Are they benefiting PA? I've got to say, Chris at Patriotic Talk, Natty, all of the Groipers are doing amazing work. I love them. Chris, you're an amazing guy. And that Groip you sent me yesterday was one of the funniest I have ever heard. Keep up the phenomenal work. Unknown Californian gave $3. Thank you very much. And said, I can't believe George Floyd's funeral upstaged Kobe Bryant's funeral. Here I was thinking Kobe's funeral was more spectacular than Princess Diana's. And then along comes George. Yes. And I don't know if anyone saw, but I believe that, was it the American Senate held an 8-minute silence, the longest silence they've ever held for anyone. Just absurd. Serena JB gave £3 and said, Jeremy Corbyn wanted everyone to take the knee for Black Lives Matters this evening. How long before George Floyd becomes a saint and kneeling to black people is made compulsory? Sick of this pandering. Well, I saw that. They tried this last week. It's not working. people in my area, they came out clapping for the NHS, but not a single person's come out and taken a knee. And I will say this, I will never take a knee. I would rather be beaten to the floor and be left unconscious than willingly go down on one knee. And I can tell you this, Patriotic Alternative will never, ever endorse any of this nonsense. And we are the only organization in Britain that is saying this is racial and presenting genuine solutions to the problem. All the CivNat movements just don't know what to do at the moment. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place because they've endorsed all this multiculturalism and they claim that the problem is wholly Islamic. Well, the chickens have truly come home to roost there. Phil Barker gave $5 and said, thank you very much. And said, the GOP is cooking hard and white Americans are stuck in race is a skin color mode. Many are discussing anarcho-capitalism or waiting for Jesus. Does anyone think white America has a future? Well, I'm going to throw this to Devon and No White Guilt. We've got a lot of questions, so we'll have to act quickly. But does white America have a future, guys?
Yeah, I think it has a future. Just I think it's going to probably be a balkanized future. I don't think there's going to be. I mean, if you just look at all the trends and at least in the short term, you know, it's nothing's going to magically change in terms of birth rates. We might have that can change quickly in the right circumstances. But I don't see anything, you know, like a baby boom or anything like that coming soon. So I think for that to happen, we would have to balkanize. And I think we're kind of headed in that direction anyway. But I mean, look, there's a lot of us here, like a lot of us, and certainly a lot of us are out on our knees, you know, embarrassing the rest of us. But I think there's still enough of us to where, and there's, you know, we're a pretty big country geographically, and there are huge portions of the country that are still relatively white and not as converged as like the larger urban places, you know, like New York and stuff like that. So yeah, it's not hopeless. It's just, it's not, you know, the idea that we're going to go back to 1950s is that's never going to happen. It's never going to be the, you know, the white picket fence, Leave It to Beaver kind of reality ever again.
There's absolutely a future. We're going to win. I've had absolute record numbers of people writing me and subscribing that have Trump banners and conservative banners on their profiles and all of these things that were normally associated with patriots and nationalists that were backward and had their heads up their asses. And instead, now they're looking out because of what Mark was talking about earlier, and they're finding that, hey, you can care about white people without having to be one of these awful people that they learned about in history. And they are doing so, and they're coming in greater numbers. Can you imagine 1 million or 2 million white people going free and ready to make a change in this country? It would be easy to reclaim the totality of our destiny overnight.
Thank you. Mr. American Salamander gave £10. Thank you very much. And said, God bless Mark, Laura, Jason, and all nationalists. Thank you for all you do for white people. Thank you very much. Sir Thomas Lipton gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, I was going to suggest that Laura now drinks my brand of tea, but unfortunately it is now owned by Unilever, who also own PG Tips. Dresden Burns gave $10. Thank you very much. And said, we must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tensions. By propounding into the consciousness of the dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by whites, we can mold them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. Well, thank you for that quote. Dresden Burns gave another $10. Thank you very much. While inflaming the black minority against the whites, we will endeavor to instill in whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the blacks. We will aid the blacks to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the professions and in the worlds of sports and entertainment. Well, thank you again, Dresden Burns. And I believe those quotes are from our friends from the tribe. Dresden Burns gave another $3. Thank you very much. With this prestige, the black will be able to intermarry with the white and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause. And this was, all those quotes were from communist Israel Cohen in 1957. So very, very powerful words. And I was correct on my guess of what sort of person said that. Very, very good. Thank you, Dresden Burns. Full Natty Bro gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, do you think the left wants to disband local law enforcement in favor of a KGB style state police force? The left would never want to give up power. So the defund police narrative seems suspicious. Well, thank you for the super chat. And yeah, I thought this is one for you guys. I mean, obviously, we've got to keep the answers quick. But I thought about this a while back when somebody mentioned to me that they would try to get rid of local police forces and then maybe have a federal police force that was under the control of the federal government to try and centralize all police power in the hands of those who are viciously anti-white and take it out of the hands of local communities. Do you two think that's something that could actually happen?
Well, I think, you know, as we've talked about before, that, you know, you have seen this, the communist insurgency, if you will, in the federal agencies, you know, like the DOJ, FBI, you know, all the intelligence agencies, the military. So it would only make sense that they, I mean, because if you think about it, it's government bureaucrats with guns at the end of the day. And we all saw the photo of the, or maybe you didn't, if you don't follow me on Instagram, but if you did, the FBI agents on their knees, there's my cat, on their knees, you know, bending the knee for the protesters. So absolutely, I could see that happening.
Yeah, that's of course the goal, is because as I was mentioning earlier, if they could have a centralized control over the totality of law enforcement, they would. But until they can get to that point, there is, I think it's called the Policing Act right now, that is moving through the federal government. And what this would do is it would repeal some of the protections that individual law officers have, so that they can't individually be sued by members of the community and et cetera. And this essentially will prevent police officers, white police officers at least, but police officers in general, from being able to police your communities. They might offend somebody. So the anti-whites will be able to write this sort of thing into the legislation of what is a punishable offense, what sort of thing the anti-whites in the community can sue or punish police officers for. And folks, police officers already are being dismissed. Their whole career is ruined overnight right now across the United States for the minor, absolutely minor things, just infractions of anti-whiteism, being heretical. But I'll pass it back to Mark. I know we're running short.
Well, thank you for that. And that was another little snippet there from Devon's excellent Instagram. Zuma Imperata gave $3. Thank you very much. Everyone's a gangster until the Minneapolis mental health police show up in your hood. Thank you for that. Celtic Advocate gave £3. Thank you very much. And said, hypothetical question. If balkanization was to occur in America and the different races formed their own ethnostates within the US, where would you suggest the whites form theirs and why? Well, this isn't really a question for me, but you guys go ahead. Where would the best place in America be for a white ethnostate?
People keep saying Idaho, but I don't even know. Like, I don't know. Like, I've been to Idaho. I have family in Idaho. It is pretty white. But I mean, the thing is, you keep seeing these stories, you know, when we had the caravans coming into America, you kept seeing these stories of the federal authorities actually flying these people into the interior of the country, flying them, illegal immigrants, flying them in, like, to Maine, which is, I think, one of the only states that's still like 90% white or something like that. Probably, I mean, not after this census, we'll see what it really is. But so, I mean, a lot of this stuff, and in Idaho actually itself, there, I read a story not that long ago about how they were shipping a lot of Somalis into Idaho for some, like these small white towns in Idaho. So they've done their best to diversify up a lot of these places that formerly would have been what I would choose. But it's anyone's guess at this point. You know, where I'm at, for example, would probably not be the whitest state in the world, even though, like, I think the major cities are still fairly white. It's anyone's guess. That's one of the things that, like, I think about all the time, and I don't have any good answer for.
There's not going to be any white ethno state. There's no concept in which, or no context in which it could currently happen. So what we need to be doing is focusing on how we free ourselves and family members and our communities, our school boards, etc., from anti-whiteism. And then there'll be a context in which other possibilities will become available. And if we have freed enough people, we have enough liquidity, numbers, intelligence, connectivity, talent, et cetera, we will be able to make use of those opportunities and overcome those challenges. And who knows what we will see then. But wherever, Devin just brilliantly pointed out, wherever you decide to set up a little ethno-state or whatever you might want to call it, the anti-whites will just use the power of the federal government to ship in the anti-white non-whites in droves. They'll pay for their housing and it'll be your tax dollars they're using for it. And that'll be the end of your little effort. Instead, do something that's worthwhile and can make a difference. Help people go free.
Thank you. The next super chat is from Rum Imurma, who gave $10. That's probably the hardest name to actually say. Thank you very much, though. And he says, I'm so grateful to PA Movement and the whole white wellbeing community. Thank you. You are all amazing. Well, thank you very much. JP gave $10. Thank you very much. And said, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Thank you. Robin Ulanov gave $3. Thank you very much. That Minneapolis councilwoman that we spoke of earlier, her name is Lisa Bender. She is a member of the tribe. No surprises there then. In fact, I'd have been more surprised if she wasn't. Grant Holt gave $3. Thank you very much. Mark, do you think the Patriots protecting statues is a good idea? The mainstream media need a far-right bogeyman to blame and they will get goaded and attacked. Then all the violence will be blamed on both sides. Well, thank you for the super chat, Grant. We've already discussed this. There is a message up on the PA website, a statement. Absolutely, do not go to London. Do not go there. Get involved in a huge fight. Because if there is a riot, it will be us who is blamed. And they are just looking for a chance to say this was all white nationalists. This was all nationalists. They're to blame. And the media have been saying the Black Lives Matter protesters, it's largely peaceful. These people want change. They want justice. Piers Morgan's backing them. They're just waiting for, they're waiting to spin the narrative that all the damage was caused by our side. That is what they want. Don't play into their hands. Roy Danton gave $10. Thank you very much. Aren't they overplaying their hand by focusing so much on blacks and ignoring other non-whites, such as Asians and Hispanics? To some degree, but I don't think Asians and Hispanics are as likely to do as much damage in America in terms of rioting as the black community. What do you guys think about that? Are they overplaying their hands?
You mean like Asians turning on the other POCs, that sort of a thing? I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like if you look at the voting numbers that, you know, like people like Vincent James always puts out, Asians vote, I think, Democrat with a fairly wide margin. And I think that partnership will exist as long as it's convenient. And yeah, eventually they might decide that, oh, Asians are also a threat to our success because of their success. We want more of their resources, but that would be, I think, far down the road.
I'll say quickly that they're not overplaying their hand. In fact, they're playing it brilliantly, as the anti-whites are wont to do, since they're communities of idiots and of midwits and midget wits and whatever else they're there are happily obey their brilliant members. And that is that they know that they can focus on a particular non-white group. And then by nature of the anti-white narrative, it is automatically communicable or communicated out to the rest of the non-white population. So any gain they make for a particular non-white group is something that they can then use for all non-white groups to inflict injury on Western kind and Western civilization. And Devin's absolutely right. The Asian community in the United States overwhelmingly votes anti-white. And so whatever policy it is, it'll be anti-white they vote for. And they're also quite smart and very wealthy. So yeah, it is. It doesn't matter. It'll end up accruing and to benefit of all the non-whites and anti-whites in the United States.
Thank you very much. Unknown Californian gave $10 and said the following. I listened to Malcolm X speaking at UC Berkeley on YouTube. He was calling for separation back in the 1960s. Malcolm also spoke about how white liberals are like foxes, very sly and friendly looking, but just as vicious as the wolf who he considers conservatives. If only we could have listened, or if only we would have listened. Thank you very much for the donation. Damien Demento gave £10. Thank you very much. Hi, Mark. If you were forced to accept a member of the current UK Parliament as a future candidate for Patriotic Alternative, who would you choose? I think that's an impossible choice. Is there any good man or woman in the UK Parliament? I've got to say, probably not. I know a lot of people like Jacob Rees-Mogg, but he is an ardent multiculturalist and believer in sort of importing huge numbers of people as long as they wave the right flag. I don't really know. I couldn't say. Sorry about that. That's not a good answer. But they really are all as bad as one another. Somebody in the chat said we should have Diane Abbott on board. That would just be funny. That would just probably be amusing. But I just don't think any of them are up to the job. And in this, I've seen them all adopt exactly the same narrative. And the Conservatives are often worse. They're all busy penning articles for their local newspapers talking about which statue they'd like to see pulled down first. It's truly disgusting. The Thin Red Line gave $10 and said, great stream. Either the elites think they have already won, or they think they are losing and they have to force events. Well, thank you very much for the donation. Roy Damton gave $25. Mark, please only read my next super chat if you feel comfortable about it. It's a little bit of a hot topic, and I'll absolutely understand if you just consider it a donation to PA. Well, thank you for that super chat. And I'm going to read the next one anyway. Roy Damton gave another $25 and said the following. For somebody who does not want to own or carry a firearm, do you think it will be safer to live in the US or the EU long term, like in 10 to 15 years from now? I think it'd be safer to live in the EU. I do believe that firearm ownership is something that is important. It's something I actually do believe in. But I think you'd be safer in the EU. What do you guys think? If you don't want to own a firearm or carry a firearm, where would you rather live?
If you don't want to have a firearm? I don't know enough about the situation in the EU. I've been there just briefly a couple times, and mostly in Eastern Europe. So, Eastern Europe seemed pretty safe, but it was also still not very diverse. So I guess it all depends on the neighborhood. It's probably a lot like here. I mean, there's places here where you'd be perfectly safe without a firearm. I don't know enough about the situation across the pond to tell you for sure.
Yeah, Roy, feel free to write me directly, because I'd like to know like what kind of environment you'd like to be in. But ultimately, I agree with Devin. There are plenty of places across the United States where you don't need a firearm over the next, 10, 15 years, that you're not going to need a firearm to protect yourself. And plenty of very beautiful places as well still left, but you'll be out there a ways.
I would say one of the safest places to go would be Switzerland. If you're looking for somewhere safe, Switzerland. Demographics gave $25. Thank you very much. Cheers. Great to see the channel growing. Well, thank you. Yes, and we're closing in on that 100,000 subs. So if you can share the channel, we are less than 2,000 away from doing it. Riderback gave $3. Thank you very much. Devon, what's a good movie to watch that critiques liberalism?
I don't know that there's one that exists. I mean, there was the Atlas Shrugged movies that are just awful. I mean, I couldn't even make it through. I think there's like three. It's a really long book. So I guess you could kind of say that's the libertarian. But there, I mean, you know, by the definition of liberalism, the way we use it today, I don't really even necessarily call it a critique of liberalism. I don't think there's really any real conservative movies. There's that pro-life movie that I still haven't seen, but that everyone flipped out about. So maybe that's a good one. And there's some, you know, Christian kind of movies that probably have, I don't know that it's critiquing liberalism so much as it's probably promoting family and that sort of a thing. I can't think of one. Maybe one of you guys know of one.
Oh, maybe one, but there's always a bit. I can't remember which film it was in. Devon, have you seen, is it Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead? It's one of the George A. Romero films. And there's a wonderful part in that. I don't know if you've seen it, where they're in a TV studio and sort of a conservative styled scientist is trying to tell all the liberals in the TV studio how you have to deal with a zombie, and they're all laughing at him and saying, oh, no, you're ridiculous. You'll probably be able to talk these creatures round. And he's pleading with the people that the only way to deal with the zombie is essentially to get rid of it. But these people are all laughing at him. And I thought that was a wonderful sort of critique of liberalism, that liberals would always find or try to find a peaceful and loving solution. And I just find that part of the film a little bit of a good critique. I don't know if you know the part I'm talking about.
I don't think I've seen that one. Is that one of the, like, the 70s zombie films?
I've seen so many, but I can't remember which one it is particularly. But it was just one of those points in a film where I thought, that's a real knock at liberalism.
There are a few 80s movies, I think, during like the Reagan administration, where they were kind of playing to that audience, where they kind of do things like that. Like, I think probably Red Dawn in the 80s, there's like a couple scenes like that where they make fun of liberals like a little bit. But you just got to remember, I mean, the Hollywood has been run 100% by leftists, we'll just say, from the beginning. So if they do that, it's usually pretty saccharine sweet. You know, it's just like it's playing to a demographic. It's kind of like Falling Down, right? A lot of people used to think that Falling Down was like this critique of the anti-white narrative, but it's really not. I mean, the guy ends up killing a Nazi because, you know, all the people he helps are like these minorities and stuff like that. And, you know, he's showing the black kid how to shoot the bazooka and stuff. And the director was Jewish and the actor was Jewish. So there's any time that you have one of these movies that appears to do that, it's kind of a throwaway. I guess there's a Stallone movie that came out recently that I haven't seen, where he's fighting illegal immigrants like on his farm. So maybe that's a good one. I haven't seen it though. I remember that came out recently. What's that?
It's the latest Rambo film.
I haven't seen it though. I've just heard good things about it. There was also a Bruce Willis. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, there was a Bruce Willis movie where it probably came out like a year or two ago, where it's kind of the same sort of a thing, where it's pro gun to some extent, and he doesn't just kill white people with his guns, and but it's always, like I said, it's always a trade off. There are those scenes, but I can't think of any one movie where it's like, and maybe Passion of the Christ. That's about the closest I can think of. Actually, Apocalypto might be the same thing.
I'm really good film as well.
Yeah.
Great Lakes Nationalist gave $20. Trump craves the approval of those who hate him and us. Maybe he doesn't really identify with his supporters. Work on becoming anti-fragile while there's still time. Well, thank you very much. Unknown Californian asked a question for Devon and gave $3. Thank you very much. Devon, are you still doing a video on the television show Cheers?
You know, I am, but after I finished the Simpsons one. See, I've been telling people, so I watched every episode of Cheers. I did, and it took like a really long time. And I was working on a really big video, and then my computer died. And the motherboard that's in that computer was a server motherboard, and it had this I'll spare the details. Long story short, the data was lost. And so I was like, I'll get to that some other time. And I got distracted I decided I'm going to watch every Simpsons episode ever made, not realizing how many Simpsons episodes there were. And I'm in like I'm like at season 20 something. There's only thankful God, there's only like 30, I think, seasons. So there's just so many Simpsons episodes. So that's going to be my first big project. And then the Cheers, like I said, I don't have to watch them all the way through, cause I've already seen every single one of them. And I made notes. My notes are still around. Cheers is a great, the reason I wanted to do the thing on Cheers was it was on for so long, just like the Simpsons, the same reason, actually, because it was on for so long, you got to see the propaganda shift with the culture. So like the first season of Cheers, Sam Malone is like this womanizer, you know, he's very machismo, and you know, he's always banging like four different girls, and women are essentially sex objects, like the first season, right? And by the last season, his boss is a woman. He's going bald. He's like this pathetic, you know, lech. And like the whole the arc of that happening was just fascinating to see, because, you know, it didn't take long. Like, I think by season three, they were already pushing the gay agenda, which is something that's saying something. Because I think the show started airing in 1981 or 82. And so they were already pushing this stuff in the mid 80s, which was a little surprising to me. And then they ratchet that up as they go too, like more and more gay agenda, more and more, you know, at the first time they bring it up, it's more just, well, let's just tolerate them. And then it's like, oh, they're great. So it's definitely something I want to do, but it will take some time.
Okay, thank you very much. Roy Danton gave $50. Thank you very much for such a generous donation. So this is absolutely the best opportunity for us to help our people go free. Now is the time to be alive. Going free will also significantly improve your quality of living and overall happiness. Well, thank you very much for that. Theo Wilmot gave £10. Thank you very much. So don't take the black pill, folks. Keep organizing, networking, and celebrating all the good in our people. And that's what we're fighting for. After all, onwards and upwards for patriotic alternative. Thank you, Theo. Roy Danton gave another $5. Thank you very much. I wish I know how to produce tea. It's a business opportunity. Thank you. Eric Drabe gave £20. Thank you very much. How do we keep our national identity but not fall for the divide and conquer strategy of Israel, China, and Russia trying to crash the West to make way for Belt and Road Plan? Great show. Thanks. The best way to keep our national identity is to shop local, go local, support local businesses, support local industries. And if you can, go to your local butcher, go to your local baker, do things like Devon's been talking about, work on your own home, build your own homestead. Things like that are good, but also bring people together as local communities to celebrate your culture. If you want to defend who you are, you have to do it through group. It's all about in-group preference, and that's what we need to build, and you build that by local initiatives. Dresden Burns gave $20. Thank you very much. Subversives have been trying to subjugate whites under blacks since post-Civil War. As besmirched as the Triple K is, it was founded to protect white Americans from the racial revenge of blacks. After the South was defeated, black judges were appointed and kangaroo courts were conducted to exact vengeance on white Southerners. Well, thank you very much. Pragmatic Patriot said, Mark, will you be donating to Unwashed's fundraiser for the Maggie Oliver Foundation? I don't know about that. I've not seen what that is, so I can't comment. Jez gave $10. Thank you very much. Devon, in your latest video, you talk about the need for a peaceful show of force and then seem to suggest that's what will work right now. However, given what happened at Charlottesville and what's predicted to happen in the London March this weekend, how would you suggest going about a peaceful show of force? And we've lost Devon for some reason. So sorry about that. I hope he will be back. 156 viewer gave £5 and simply said donation. Thank you very much. Timmy Bobinson gave £5. Thank you very much. Who is going to carve the stone statue of Stormzy to replace our historical monuments? That's a very good question. We'll have to find a black stonemason. Here's Devon. Hello, back again. Did you hear that question that was for you?
No, actually, I just dropped, like, my internet dropped, so I switched devices. That's the game I have to play out here. But it was roboting real hard, and then all of a sudden it dropped out. So I missed the question.
The question was, how should we go about a peaceful show of force?
You know, that's something actually I want to talk to you guys about maybe offline. That's a long discussion. But that is something that that we need to start discussing. We need to start thinking about things that we can do IRL that aren't going to be like, as you're describing, the honeypot kind of a situation, something that we're not necessarily advertising, but we can do, but we can show up. And because I think that that's the kind of thing that we need to do, something that's physical, something that shows that, hey, look, you know, it's easy for them to write us off as just these weirdos in our mom's basement if we're not actually showing up in the physical world and showing that, no, we're like normal guys. we're normal guys that just like you. And I think you do a great job of that with your conferences and everything like that. So that's something that I would really like to talk to you about, but I think that's like a longer discussion.
Well, we can certainly do that. And I am always available to talk to offline. Maybe we could arrange a Skype conference sometime. That'd be fantastic. Roy Danton gave $10. Thank you very much. And he says, thank you so much. I really love the US and don't want to run away. It's just hard to not get scared of things these days. Well, thank you very much. Pep gave $3. Thank you. He said, Sargon is streaming. I'm going to gripe him about grooming gangs. Watch out. Thank you very much. Cockney Nutjob gave $10 and said, you can own a shotgun in England and Wales via your county police, and you can keep them at home. The police will run a check on you and visit your house. Tell them it's for clay pigeon shooting. Join a club and get a feel of the gun. One thing I will say about gun ownership in the UK is it is possible, but the police do have a right to come and visit your home whenever they see fit. And for nationalists, that may present a problem for obvious reasons. Grim Fan gave $3 and simply said, all the best. Well, thank you very much. And that is the end of the Super Chats. Thank you to everyone who's donated so generously tonight. And now we will quickly ask the top three questions. Adam said, is this the tipping point for nationalism? The statue attacks must be waking up many. If we play our cards right, we could make good out of this. We are doing, and it has been a major tipping point. Son of Britain said, do you think this whole Black Lives Matter drama has been planned in advance so as to entice a reaction from like the coming Saturday protests in Britain so the anti-whites can bring about more repressive laws? Yes, I do. And we do have some more Super Chats just come in. Jordan Ansell gave $5 and said, Mark, you are doing God's work. Maybe we should get an Oswald Mosley statue when you're in power. Well, there is a Karl Marx statue in Manchester, and I would certainly be up for replacing that with a statue of Sir Oswald Mosley. Oive gave $25. He said, this is for the Zionist debate. Well, thank you very much, my friend. That was some time ago, but it is still available on BitChute. And Lewis Jones gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend, and said, would you start a fundraiser to buy a tea plantation? If I win the lottery, I promise Laura Towler I will buy her own tea plantation so she can start Laura T's Tea Company, which can be absolutely non-woke. And we have one last unpaid question, which is from Connor Chickmeister. And he said, what advice would you have for nationalists in the education system, such as those at universities who will undoubtedly soon be experiencing even greater brainwashing attempts after the BLM protests? Well, I would say to all nationalists in the education system, just focus on getting educated. Keep your head down, get your degree, get your qualifications. One of the big mistakes I made at university was I put my head above the parapet. I stood as a candidate. I was harassed heavily. I concentrated too much on politics. I did excellently at A-level, but not so good at my degree because I spent too much time caring about the politics. And I'm not saying don't care about politics, but what I'm saying is don't make a rod for your own back. Go out there. Do things off campus, keep your head down, get a good degree and move forward. And we've got one last Super Chat from Oive. He gave $25. Thank you very much. And said, an impossible task, I'm sure, but not having to rely on Google Pay would be nice. Yeah, people can donate via Bitcoin. If you wish to donate via Bitcoin, my Bitcoin address is in the videos. Please, if you want to send a substantial Bitcoin donation, please email me first, though, to make sure it's the most up-to-date address, because I update the addresses every 12 months. But if you would like to send Bitcoin, please check the address in the latest video. I update the video, the Bitcoin address, every 12 months. So please make sure it's the up-to-date one, which is in the latest video. So thank you very much. And we have... Does anyone else have anything to say about keeping their heads down at university? Devin, what are your thoughts for people who are in the education system?
I would just say my advice is kind of the same as Edward Dutton's, where unless you're in a field that you need a degree, like you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer, we need lots of lawyers. At least in the American system, why put yourself in that much debt? For a lot of these jobs, you actually don't need a degree. And so you're just paying, into the system. You're paying for other people to be propagandized to. So unless you're going to be a scientist or, you know, one of these, there's plenty of jobs and professions that you need a degree. But for example, you're a computer programmer or You know, like in my case, I taught myself 3D animation and was a 3D animator professionally for, you know, some years just from watching YouTube videos. The education's so easy to get for free for those kinds of a job, like the kinds of jobs where you just need a portfolio or demonstrate your ability to do something. A degree isn't nearly as important as it once was. So you're just kind of just getting into, you're building student debt for no reason. But yeah, if you're trying to get like a law degree or something like that, I just would, you know, keep your head down and you're, cause you're not going to, I mean, you're not going to win them over. I mean, you're not going to win your professor over and you're not going to, make any friends that way. You might as well just keep your head down and get through it. And if you want to try to like red pill people or whatever, just do it the same way. I remember when I was a degenerate pot smoker and I'd get a new job at a new pizza place, you'd always have to do like the secret, hey, do you smoke? You know, do like the secret handshake or whatever to see who else smoked pot. Same sort of thing. You just have to be, you know, on the down low about it and find out who your allies are, I guess. And, you know, you can find friends that way. But I wouldn't try to be, you know, if you're trying to get like a degree and get through the educational system like that, I wouldn't try to rock the boat because it's just going to hurt you in the end.
Well, thank you. That is fantastic advice. And that about brings us to the end of the show. But before we go to wrap up, I will say change.org has now got a petition for a black ethno state in North America. I may well be signing that petition. That would certainly be an interesting one to get going. So, but it has been an amazing show tonight. It has been a record-breaking show tonight. At our peak, we had 2,679 concurrent viewers. And when the show ends, we will see if we beat the total number of viewers, which last week was a previous high of 7,200 people watching over the 2 hours. But first and foremost, I would really like to thank Devin Stack Blackpilled, firstly, for being an amazing guest, secondly, for producing such amazing content, and thirdly, for breaking the PWR viewer record and taking us to a new high. Thank you so much, my friend. Please give some final thoughts.
Well, I would just say, yeah, it's going to be get your popcorn. I don't know what's going to be on the horizon, but whatever it is, it's not going to be boring. Prepare, make sure you prepare for whatever, you know, not saying that the world's burning, it's all going to collapse, but you know, it's always good to be prepared in case something happens. Like, you know, the COVID thing, just as an example, like there were people rushing to the stores to get toilet paper and all that stuff. And I was sitting back at home and didn't have any worries about getting supplies or supplies running short because, you know, I was ready for something unexpected. So it's always good to be prepared, as the Boy Scouts used to say before they became the gender neutral scouts and then went bankrupt. So just I would say try to prepare for whatever and keep your head up. And it's going to be a wild ride. If you want to check out my book or any of that stuff, just go to my YouTube channel. All the links to everything under every video, it has pretty much the exact same spiel. You can just see the links to all of my stuff underneath those videos. And like I said, the website's not really updated like it should be. Maybe I'll update it sometime this week. But I really appreciate you having me on too. It's I really like what you're doing, and I really like this format, and I really appreciate being a guest.
Well, thank you, and we'd love to have you on again. I said at the end of the last time you were on, because you've been on once before, that I would love to do more in-depth talks with you about films, and I was really hoping at some point something would come up where it would be the perfect time for you to come on and give one of your amazing analysis of a current film. But obviously, with what's happening, I couldn't think of a better guest for tonight, especially with all your superb, hilarious, and acidic commentary on the current situation. So thank you so much for joining us. I would love to work with you more in the future. And after the show, we will chat about getting together at some point and planning something bigger. But thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for making this a record-breaking stream. Jason, thank you also to you. You were with us when we were down and out, and now you're with us at our greatest height. Thank you for being such an amazing constant in all this. Who's on tap this week? What are you going to be up to? And give yourself your usual excellent outro.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for the opportunity to participate in such a magnificent community, Mark, here on PWR, our great leader, Mark Collett. And today we had, of course, the great Devin Stack, Blackpilled, and really had a show that reached the zenith. So a big thank you to everybody who showed up today, who financially gifted Mark, and who commented. You are a wonderful group of people. We are the best of Western kind. You are the best of your family. You're the best of your community. You're the best of your state and province. You're the best of your country. Never let the anti-whites tell you otherwise. And we are growing rapidly, folks, around the world. There are a great many of our brothers and sisters are coming. The vagues out there are coming to hear what we have to say, and they're going to find that we have the answers where all of the conservatives and patriots have no answers. Things are on the verge of a big change. We're going to have on a Friday, I think it's going to be TAP at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I believe. I'll have to check again, but I think that's right. And we also have the Garage Party, the Chuck Martell, the music and poetry at 6 o'clock over on my channel, No White Guilt. We're going to have the absolute hero, Sarah Dye. If you don't know about her story, please look it up. She was more courageous than most of our men, and that is a really sad thing to say these days. But yeah, one of our women standing up with her babies beside her and fighting for white well-being. So we salute her, and we'll talk to her on Friday. Thank you, Mark.
Well, thank you very much. Now, before we end the stream, I just want to say it has been a record-breaking show, and there is a guy I'd like to get back on this particular show. He's been on once before, and that is Vincent James of the Red Elephants. I'd really love to have him on to discuss this issue. I'm no longer in touch with him. I'm going to try and get in touch with him this week, but if anyone is in touch with him, who speaks to him regularly, can you please tell him that I am trying to contact him? And if he wants to send me an email at mark@thefallofwesternman, or get in touch with me via Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, I really am interested in talking to Vincent James and getting him back on the show too. He does some amazing work. So that just leaves me to say thank you to everyone for making this a record-breaking show. But before we go, please check out the Patriotic Alternative website. Read our statement about Saturday's planned protests in London. Stay safe. Do not get yourself arrested. You going to London and getting beaten up or arrested will not help us in the long term. It will not help you in the long term. We are about community building, not playing into the system's hands. But thank you so much to everyone. This has been a record-breaking night. 2,679 people watching. Absolutely phenomenal. Thank you to Devin Stack, Blackpilled. As always, my friend, you are incredible. Thank you to No White Guilt, Jason. As always, you are also incredible. And thank you to everybody who has donated so very generously to tonight's show. I will be back myself on Friday to do my usual video, which will be about the racism that fuels Black Lives Matter. So that will be a very, very interesting video, very normie friendly and very easy for people to share. So I hope you enjoy that. And I will be doing a number of other streams with people. People have been asking about the Mad Max stream. That hasn't happened yet. It's going to be with Chris Dangerfield. He has been suffering from a concussion. When he's back, I will be doing that with him then. It is still scheduled, but unfortunately hasn't been able to take place. So again, thank you, Devin. Thank you, Jason. But thank you most of all, as always, to this amazing audience. Welcome, and thank you to all the new people watching. I love you all. You are the people that make this movement what it is. We are coming together. We are forming an alternative community, and we are finally pushing back in a meaningful way. We are going from strength to strength, and when we come together, nobody will be able to stop us. Thank you so much. Please, please stay safe, and I will see you again same time next week for another episode of PWR. Have a great evening, and look after yourselves.